I'm Willow Belden, and you're listening to Out There. This is a podcast about the outdoors, from your window box and garden, to the fields on the edge of town, to the forests, prairies, seashores, and wilderness. On the show, we explore our relationship with nature through stories, interviews, essays, and even some fiction. We travel around the U.S. and the world with tales of love and heartbreak, passion and adversity, desperation and triumph. A few months ago, we had a piece on the show by a scientist named Trista Vic Majors. She was talking about her team's research in Antarctica, trying to find out if there's life deep beneath the ice. After the episode aired, several listeners asked to know more about the discoveries that Trista and her colleagues had made. So we invited her back on the show. She joins us via Skype. And I should say that if you haven't heard Trista's original episode, you might want to go back and listen to that before you keep going with this one. Okay, so as you may remember, Trista's team was looking for life in a so-called subglacial lake. In other words, a lake that's underneath the Antarctic ice sheet. There are hundreds of these lakes, and although no one had ever sampled water from them, Trista says scientists had reason to believe that there could be life in the lakes.
So far, everywhere that we have looked, that there is water and a source of nutrients, you find life. And, you know, just based on that idea, you would think there should be life there. And other researchers had also been able to retrieve some ice samples from above one of the other subglacial lakes called Lake Vostok, which is a huge lake, and they found microbial cells in that ice that presumably had come from the lake at some point. So we had a few different things pointing us in that direction.
So a source of nutrients. Antarctica strikes me as a sort of a wasteland. Where would nutrients be coming from for a lake deep underneath the ice?
Right. Yeah, I mean, from the surface, Antarctica looks like a wasteland. It's all frozen and white, and there aren't a lot of nutrients at the surface. But when you get down below that ice, depending on the part of the continent that you're in, and particularly the area that we were in, all of the land underneath the ice actually used to be underneath the ocean. So it's all old ocean sediments. And old ocean sediments, of course, have decomposed bodies of fish or other things that were living in the oceans at the time, and those contain nutrients.
So you drilled into a lake called Subglacial Lake Willens. Why that lake? Why not try to go somewhere closer to, for instance, McMurdo Research Station?
So the reason for choosing Subglacial Lake Willens was it was actually partly its location. So in spite of the fact that it's a few hundred miles away from McMurdo, which makes it hard to get to, it's actually one of the easier places to get to on the ice surface. And it's also close to the coastline of Antarctica. So this lake actually drains its water periodically into the ocean. And so the thought was that if we went somewhere upstream and something bad happened, like we spilled something into the lake or something disastrous like that, then if we were somewhere upstream, then that contamination was going to get into all of the other subglacial lakes. Whereas by choosing Subglacial Lake Willens, we were kind of protected from that, in that it was going to go out to sea and be diluted. And the other reason is the ice thickness. So the ice there is about half a mile thick, which is certainly not inconsequential, but it's a lot more manageable than other places on the continent where you're looking at ice, 3 to 4 times that thick.
So as you described in your essay, which many of our listeners may have heard, getting to subglacial Lake Willens and drilling into this lake, this was a pretty precarious process and difficult. Mm-hmm. But once you did manage to drill into the ice, you found that, yes, there is life down there. So tell us about that life. What is it like?
Sure. We found microbial life, single-celled microorganisms. We found about the same amount of bacteria and archaea as you would see in low nutrient areas of the ocean. And we found that they were active and they're growing.
How did the life get down there? I mean, has it always been there?
Oh, that's a good one. So really, you hit on one of the big questions in microbial ecology as a whole, which is how do things get to where they are? There's some people have the idea that all microorganisms are everywhere on the planet, and just certain ones survive in certain places and certain ones do not. But yeah, we really don't know. Being that it's an old ocean environment, there could be things that survived in the sediments and have been able to adapt to living in this new environment. And they could also be coming from sources upstream. It's possible that there are hydrothermal vents at other places under the ice. And organisms that are associated with those could make it into the lakes and survive. We don't know. We don't have a good way to answer that.
Hydrothermal vents. So that would that be, what does that mean?
Hydrothermal vents. It's geological activity that instead of being like a volcano or something, it's water that's flowing underground close to a hot place in the Earth's subsurface. It's heated up and then it comes up to the surface along with gases and things like that usually.
And so life could be in that and could have gotten into these lakes somehow from that.
Yeah, it's one possibility.
So these microorganisms that are in this lake, are they unique or are they present elsewhere?
Right. I mean, when we look at microorganisms to try to figure out what they are, because they're so small, and because if you look at them under a microscope, they all kind of look the same. You can't tell one from another, or one that's from subglacial Lake Willens doesn't look any different from one that's hanging out in your backyard. And so we extract their DNA, and we compare their DNA to the DNA of other microorganisms from other places. So by doing that, we can figure out how closely related they are. And when we do that with the organisms from subglacial Lake Willens, we find that some of them are really closely related to things that are common in other lakes and are common in the ocean. And there are some things that are not related to anything that we've seen. And that's very interesting, but it's also not unusual for microbes because we actually, as a whole, we don't know very much about them. So it's actually pretty common to find things that aren't related to things that we've seen before.
What do these microorganisms eat?
There are a few different types that we've found. And we can infer what they eat. I mean, we haven't been able to grow them in the lab and actually test what they eat, but we can infer what they eat based on their DNA sequences. And there are some who are eating just organic carbon, so like decomposed organic matter from other animals. There are some that are using the rocks and the sediments underneath the lake to get energy. And we also found some that use ammonium, which is also probably a relic of the marine environment.
Do they need to maybe breathe is the wrong word, but do they need air? Do they need oxygen?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's not really the wrong word. They don't breathe the way that we do, but they, the ones that use oxygen, use it the same way that we do biochemically. And so, yes, most of the organisms that we found are using oxygen because there is some oxygen in the lake, although it's only about, it's about 16% of what we have in the atmosphere. So it's not a lot, but they are using that. There are also organisms down there that maybe are breathing nitrate. And maybe deeper down in the sediments, we think there are some that are using methane.
So obviously, it's fascinating to find that there is indeed life in these lakes, but what's the broader significance of it? Does it have any sort of larger bearing on things?
Right. So I think there are a couple of different ways to look at it. You know, some people like to take the approach of, you know, it's important for basic science. So we now know more about where life can survive and what conditions that we would think are really extreme are actually not that extreme for things that are adapted to them. So I think that piece of knowledge is important. There are also people who are interested in astrobiology, which is the study of the potential for life on other worlds. And Antarctica is an important analog for icy planets in the solar system and beyond. So what we learn there informs that. And then the third reason, especially in these coastal subglacial lakes that we're studying, from what we know so far, they really put a lot of water and probably sediments and certainly the cells that are living there out into the ocean. And so the ocean surrounding Antarctica is really important to the world's ocean system. A lot of important water masses are formed there, and a lot of important nutrient cycling happens there. So understanding what's happening in these lakes allows us to kind of put together another piece of what's affecting the oceans and what that might mean, as especially as climate is changing in Antarctica.
Was there anything about the life that you discovered that surprised you?
For me, it was really how much of it there was. And I don't think I was alone in this. I think a lot of people were expecting that there would not be very many cells there, and that if they were growing, it would be so slowly that it might be really, really hard for us to detect them or detect that they were alive. So for me, that was the biggest surprise, was that we pulled up a water sample and put it under the microscope, and you could just see all of these cells. And I couldn't believe it at first.
So what's next on your agenda? What more do you want to know?
So many things. So for subglacial Lake Willens, we're really trying to nail down the kind of getting beyond just the, oh, cool, there's life there, you know, and really trying to hone in on how it survives there. And is the ecosystem sustainable in the long term? What does it need in order to keep going? Things like that, I think, are really, really interesting.
So the question of, is the ecosystem sustainable, why wouldn't it be? I mean, obviously it's already there. It's been doing okay, it seems like.
Right. So, I mean, one of the big questions is, you can look at the growth rate of the organisms, and you can do some kind of quick models, you know, quick calculations to say, okay, if they're growing this fast and there's this much food there, how long is it going to take before they use all of that up? And so we've done some models like that, and we have some calculations that suggest that, you know, if that lake just sat there, it would eventually run out of something that they need, whether it be oxygen or carbon. You know, there are various different things. So then the question becomes, okay, is this an ecosystem that is the same all the time, or is it constantly changing? Like, they grow for a while and then they all get flushed out into the ocean and something new comes in, and we don't know that yet. So I guess, yeah, that's what I mean by, is it sustainable? Like, is it going to last forever, or at least what forever to us is?
Right.
And then the next step, we hope anyway, if we can get some more field seasons, is to go to more subglacial lakes that are in the neighborhood and try to figure out how those are connected, you know, see if they, do they look the same as subglacial Lake Willens? How diverse are they? And how do the different ecosystems work?
That was Trista Vick Majors. She's a PhD candidate in ecology and environmental sciences at Montana State University, and she was part of the team that discovered life in subglacial Lake Willens. That's it for this episode of Out There. We'd love it if you'd leave us a review on iTunes. And to sweeten the deal, if you send me an email letting me know that you've left a review, I'll be sure to mention you on social media. By the way, it doesn't have to be a 5-star review, although, of course, we hope it will be. Also, if you recommend this podcast on any online forums or message boards that you're a part of, shoot me an email and let me know. I'd be happy to give you a shout out on the show. My email is willow@outthereshow.com. Our theme music was written by Jared Arnold, and our website is outthereshow.com. Have a beautiful day, be bold, go outside, and find your dreams.